me add my good morning and welcome to those of you visiting for the first time. I'm Jim Key, and I'm privileged to serve this congregation and your over 1,000 sibling congregations and communities that we're all in covenant together. So great to be here. In my 6 years as vice president and president of the district, first called the Thomas Jefferson District, then the Southeast District, I've never been to this congregation. So this is my first visit, and I'm delighted to be here on this celebratory weekend. It's delightful to be here. So thank you. And thank you, Dave, for the privilege of sharing your free pulpit. Let me share with you something that's a reading by Bruce Marshall that's spoken to me over the years in a number of ways, and I hope it does to you as well. It's called Hope, Not Optimism. A friend whose wife is undergoing treatment for serious illness told me that their physician advised them to approach it with hope, not optimism. My friend found this guidance helpful, and it makes sense to me. Optimism, as I understand it, is an attitude of expectation that a particular result will occur, that a person will recover from an illness, that we will achieve a specific goal, that the publisher's clearinghouse will pick my number from among the billions submitted. The dictionary defines optimism as an inclination to anticipate the best possible outcome. Hope is less specific. It's an attitude that looks for the possibility in whatever life deals us. Hope does not anticipate a particular outcome, but keeps before us the possibility that something useful will come from this. We are told that an optimistic outlook is a good thing, but I've rarely found it so. Optimism often leads to disappointment. When the best possible outcome doesn't occur, we are let down, may even feel betrayed. Optimism may then become its opposite, pessimism, an inclination to anticipate the worst possible outcome. Hope is more resilient, more enduring, more helpful. In a serious illness, for example, there are often setbacks. In the face of these, optimism may wear down. But hope encourages us to move forward despite the setbacks. As we pursue our goals in life, optimism may lead us to expectations that are unrealistic and ultimately hurtful. Hope advises us to look squarely at the realities that confront us while remaining aware of the possibilities. Eric Fromm observed, "To hope means to be ready at every moment for that which is not yet born, and yet not become desperate if there is no birth in our lifetime. Those whose hope is weak settle for comfort or for violence. Those whose hope is strong see and cherish signs of new life and are ready every moment to help the birth of that which is ready to be born." It is helpful guidance, I think, whether we are faced with a serious illness, a personal dilemma, or a society that seems determined to destroy itself. Not optimism that a particular result will occur, but hope to see and cherish signs of new life wherever these may occur. I want you to picture Linus and Charlie Brown leaning over a wall, you know, the four-panel comic strips. Charlie Brown appears melancholy, and Linus looks nonplussed. "You know what," says Charlie Brown, "yesterday I was almost happy. For one brief moment today, I thought I was winning in the game of life. But there was a flag on the play." I think this comic strip first appeared in 1959, but I came across it again in 2000 because I referenced it in a journal that I was writing during that year. And I came across that journal just a few weeks ago as I was cleaning out my records. My wife and I are moving after 18 years in one house, and I ran across it again. You remember that Charles Schulz was the creator of Peanuts, syndicated daily and Sunday comic strip, which ran from 1950 to 2000, 50 years. The strip is the most popular and influential in the history of comic strips, with almost 18,000 strips published in all, making it arguably the longest story ever told by one human being. A Peanut cartoon ran in over 2,600 newspapers with a readership of 355 million in 75 countries and was translated in 21 languages. A far reach, I think, for a humble philosopher. I was never much of a follower of comic strips when even as a kid, but I did read Peanuts and enjoyed the humor and wisdom dispensed by Schultz through the characters of Charlie Brown, Linus, and Lucy, Snoopy, and Peppermint Patty, and so many others. Yesterday, I was almost happy. For one brief moment today, I thought I was winning in the game of life. But there was a flag on the play. That was how I felt on November the 9th, 2016, the morning after the election, when the results sank in. It was a punch in the gut. Like many of you, I suspect, it was hard to reconcile what I thought would be a continuation of the slow bending of the arc of the moral universe towards justice with what looked like a misplaced confidence that the 1950s would be a good period to replicate. Now, let me tell you, as a young boy and teen in the 50s, and while it was pretty good to people that looked like me of my gender and background, it wasn't so good for people of color and women and the LGBT community and even those with disabilities. So it seemed to me on election day that someone had thrown a flag on the play. I turned to Charlie Brown because he always seemed to see hope for a better day, as do I. And I think it is our Unitarian Universalism faith that gives me this hope. I want to share my own story of finding Unitarian Universalism and why it is hope that is our great good news to share, and why this is the right time to share that good news to those like us who are experiencing anxiety about this new world that we find ourselves in. This hope, inherent in our theology, informs the work I do to steer our associations towards that radically welcoming and inclusive beloved community that we so long for. And frankly, I couldn't find, although looking for over 30 years. I grew up in a working poor household in the Jim Crow period in the southwest mountains of this commonwealth, the sixth child of a single mother. My radical grandfather, a social gospel Methodist, influenced my early life. My mother would decamp to his home in North Carolina when we would hit difficult economic times. Under his tutelage, I was encouraged to speak out against the evils of segregation and the errors of theology he observed in almost all white Christian denominations of his time and place. I married Liz, a friend I had met in middle school. I should add that we did not marry in middle school. I do tell people not from the South that we met at a family reunion in Bedford County, which is somewhat true. We raised two sons and a daughter, and we now have six grandchildren. We enjoy a privileged life, no doubt. She's a registered nurse and worked in OBGYN through the years working with indigent and at-risk women, and I had a career with IBM for over 30 years. We lived and worked all over the United States and Asia, always seeking, always joining the most liberal and progressive faith community we could find. My humanist views were evolving, and I found myself challenging the relevance of organized religion as I was experiencing it in an increasingly unjust world. As our family moved about and sought progressive religious community, we never encountered a Unitarian Universalist in any of the places we lived. Not one. Austin's wisdom story spoke to me this morning about moving and being challenged. As I said, I was born and reared. My mother said she reared children. You raise chickens, you rear children. was reared in Virginia, moved to Norfolk, on to New Jersey, worked in New York City, then to Oklahoma, Missouri, and Missouri. We lived in both states. Kansas, Georgia, Tokyo, Connecticut. Now, I'm pretty sure there were Unitarian Universalists around, but no one was out. No one seemed to be confident enough about what they believed to share it with us. And we did not live in a conservative bubble, active in the Urban League, NAACP, National Organization for Women, Planned Parenthood, progressive political events. I bet there were Unitarians or Universalists or Unitarian Universalists in those gatherings. But we never met anyone who identified as such in all of those decades, not one. I want you to think about that for a while. Liz and I returned to the South with some trepidation, moving to Beaufort, South Carolina in 1997. It was there that a Presbyterian minister finally introduced us to Unitarian Universalism. She said, "You need to be over there with those people." And she said it exactly that way. Those people were a small group of UUs displaced from their natural habitat in the Northeast who were organizing a Unitarian Universalist congregation in a town of 12,000. So in 1999, the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Beaufort became an affiliated congregation of the UUA. Liz and I had found our liberal religious home after searching for over three decades. As brand new UUs, we were founding members of an emerging congregation, which I served as president for 5 years. But here's the point. It shouldn't take a Presbyterian minister to be the prophetic voice for Unitarian Universalism. Our responsibility as religious liberals, it seems to me, as prophetic voices in our communities who are all about changing the world to a place of more justice, more peace, and more love, is to tell the good news of this faith we share and the hope for humankind it provides. And it is critical in these times for more of us to be vocal about our values. A PS to this story. I love to tell this part. That Presbyterian minister that pointed Liz and me to that emerging UU congregation is now a fully fellowshipped UU minister serving our congregation in Ashland, Oregon. Now, that might be an engaging enough story if it ended there, but a life-threatening event occurred on December the 15th, 1999. These dates are very burned in my memory. I was diagnosed on that day with stage 4 lung cancer, prescribed a palliative treatment of chemotherapy that would continue for 10 months, and told to get my affairs in order. Now, there is nothing like a death sentence to focus the mind. I pretty much put my life on hold. Completion of our new home, starting my new consulting practice, but not my newly discovered religious community. I experienced the classic stages of loss and grief, but with the support of my Unitarian Universalist community, I moved quickly to acceptance because I had hope. I had responsibilities, after all, as well. I was managing the finances of this new congregation, you see. My faith community was my North Star. Their love was unconditional, their hope contagious, their support for Liz and me boundless. So in the middle of my chemotherapy, a person who had been an early organizer of our congregation asked if I would serve as president. Now think about that. I was stunned. I asked her if she thought it could wait to see if I lived through the year. She said, "Of course, but I'll be back." And indeed, she came back the following year, held the mirror under my nose. I fogged it. And they asked me to serve. So a year and a half after the diagnosis, I became the second president of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Beaufort. Served in that role for 5 years. Friends, hear this clearly. Unitarian Universalism saved my life. I owe this faith something, so I serve it as best as my talents allow. And you just have to love a group of people with a sense of humor that has the chutzpah to ask you to serve on committees and boards while at the same time you're planning your memorial service. You just do. The good news of Unitarian Universalism arrived for me just in time. And I mean that to the core of my being, just in time. Others shouldn't have to wait, shouldn't frankly have to die waiting for our message of hope. Some more wisdom from Charlie Brown that helped me when I spent too much time brooding. Sometimes I lie awake at night and ask, "Why me?" Then a voice answered, "Nothing personal. Your name just came up." My name just came up. But because of my newly discovered Unitarian Universalist faith, centered on hope, I was able to live more fully while clearly thinking about death. Now, this faith tradition of hope helps me cope with this new reality that perhaps this new administration in Washington may not be sufficiently dedicated to civil and human rights. This faith encourages me to live a life of resistance and engagement over the next 4 years. The words of Vaclav Havel speak to me during this moment. They're taken from his Disturbing the Peace, a book published in 1990 about the history of Czechoslovakia under communism. It's a rather long quotation, but I want to share it with you. And I'm quoting now. "I should probably say first that the kind of hope I often think about, I understand above all as a state of mind, not a state of the world. Either we have hope within us or we don't. It is a dimension of the soul, and it's not essentially dependent on some particular observation of the world or estimate of the situation. Hope is not prognostication. It is an orientation of the spirit, an orientation of the heart. It transcends the world that is immediately experienced and is anchored somewhere beyond its horizons. I don't think you can explain it as a mere derivation of something here, of some moment, or of some favorable signs of the world. I feel that its deepest roots are in the transcendental, just as the roots of human responsibility are, though of course I can't, unlike Christians for instance, say anything concrete about the transcendental. An individual may affirm or deny that his hope is so rooted, but this does nothing to change my conviction. The most convinced materialist and atheist may have more of this genuine, transcendentally rooted inner hope than 10 theologians together. Hope, in this deep and powerful sense, is not the same as joy that things are going to go well or willingness to invest in enterprises that are obviously headed for early success, but rather an ability to work for something because it is good, not just because it stands a chance to succeed. The more unpropitious the situation in which we demonstrate hope, the deeper that hope is. Hope is definitely not the same thing as optimism. It is not the conviction that something will turn out well, but the certainty that something makes sense regardless of how it turns out. In short, I think that the deepest and most important form of hope, the only one that can keep us above water and urge us to good work, and the only true source of the breathtaking dimension of the human spirit and its efforts, is something we get, as it were, from elsewhere. It is also this hope above all which gives us the strength to live and continually to try new things, even in conditions that seem hopeless." End quote. For me, this elsewhere that Havel names is Unitarian Universalism. With our reliance on reason, science, intuition, and the wisdom and prophets from many sources that we consider, rather than a soulless creed. Again, quoting Havel, "It is also this hope, above all, which gives us the strength to live and continually to try new things, even in conditions that seem hopeless." May it be so.